It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to Give Me the Fear, the Britflix podcast Frightfest 2023 preview series. My name is Stuart Wright, and usually I host this show, but for this genre talent-filled build-up to the Woodstock of Gore, I'm keeping stump. When this intro is done, this is the last you're going to hear from me until I ask you to tell your friends all about it. The spoiler-free interviews are brief, and across the entire series, you will discover the kind of knowledge and experience about how to make horror films that they just don't teach you at film school. Are you ready for that? After looking back at the blood, sweat and tears that went into their creative successes, I ask them one last question. If you could handpick one person to be in the audience, alive or dead, famous or personal to you, for your Frightfest screening, who would it be and why? I think you're going to love the answers this question elicits. I certainly do. That's my introduction over with. Let's hear from the talent.
I'm delighted to say that I've got a film called Werewolf Santa, which is showing at Frightfest this year. My name is Errol Anthony Hales, and I am the director of that film. What happens when Santa turns into a werewolf on Christmas Eve? Well, it's not good. And you can probably imagine he goes down chimneys and eats families alive and all the rest of it. In terms of pre-production, what's really exciting is when we were out there building a sleigh in the woods and getting the snow machine in and walking our werewolf Santa through in a rehearsal and all the people that he'd be killing and gutting. And it's just such a vast canvas out in a park in the middle of Surrey, pretending to be Hastings, Alexandra Park, because I'm from Hastings. And it was so epic and fun. And it's the closest I've been, I think, to being in a toy shop in a film environment. Because werewolves and Christmas and horror, that was like Christmas Day on whatever day that was in the middle of summer whenever that was. One of the fond memories I have of shooting the movie is that there was a scene involving sexual content. And when we shot that and there was a werewolf Santa involved in that, I won't give too much away, fun, silly midnight movie stuff. The owner of the location sat down with me very angry the next day and said, are you shooting a porn? And I said, no, not shooting a porn. Because what, for one, what kind of porn would that be with a kind of a werewolf Santa and all these naked people that are very, not a category I currently know of. Not that I know any. And so that was just bizarre to sit down and be grilled on being told off because neighbors were walking past the porn shoot with the snow machine and all the nudity. I said, no, it's really not. It's a comedy. It's very silly. And talked to ourselves around that situation. But I'd never been in detention or in the headmaster's office in that way before. An exciting memory from the edit of this film was cracking it. It was really bloody difficult, this thing. and it required a bit of edit rewriting because we didn't get all the coverage I'd have liked to on our limited budget. There's always limited budgets on these things sometimes, which is fine because you make solutions happen. But it was tough. It was really tough for a long time to kind of throw things together and see clues of where a narrative could be really structured with the coverage that we did have. And eventually it kind of panned out. A couple of reshoots, I guess, a couple of things. And it got there. But when we finally locked that up and it kind of made coherent sense, that was a very, neck of large Bailey's moment. At a screening of Werewolf Santa, I would love Joe Bob Briggs to be in the audience, and touch wood, at some point he can be, because there might be some American screenings. Let's see. I'd love to get in for Fright Fest. Let's see. I think he has a very, very busy schedule, August through September and October, and with the Shudder and Joe Bob Briggs and the drive-in. But he's so knowledgeable about horror, so much fun to have a drink with. I mean, Joe Bob in the Phoenix is almost like Christ Landing or something, in my opinion. Amazing. He just is a fright fester through and through. And he's been in movies there. He's been in Scare Package 1, and I don't know if he appeared in Part 2. He's obviously a horror fan through and through. So I just think him in any audience, like any fright fester, is a true fan. It'd be great to have him there. I think he's seen it. I think he enjoys the script, at least when he first looked at it. So yeah, that would be the pick, and let's make it happen.
My name is Dominic O'Neill, and on Haunted Oscar Live, I am co-producer, writer, and director. Haunted Oscar Live takes place on Halloween night, 1998, and a local TV station investigates poltergeist activity in a haunted house. The script development and pre-production for Haunted Oscar Live wasn't actually that long. We started writing it in summer 2020, and we went into pre-production in September of last year, so it was a little over 2 years, which isn't a very, very long time to go from nothing to something. And we really didn't know that we had a film until we had a house, because the whole film takes place in one location, and we wanted a very specific kind of house. We wanted a big, detached house, very early 20th century. And if we could use the exteriors, we wanted it to be outside on the corner of the street. Everything was going to be focused entirely on the house, so it had to be right. So we really didn't know we could make the film as quickly as we wanted to unless we got the location. And we were so lucky that as soon as we started pre-production, we put a message out online, and within like 5 hours, I had a message from a homeowner. I had put up the specs online of what we were looking for. I had a message within 5 hours that they had exactly the house that we were looking for and that it wasn't occupied at the moment. And we went and met them, and within a matter of days, we had secured the location. And we were lucky as well that it hadn't been modernized, so it fitted a late 90s look. And we also had free rein to make a few different touches to it. So without that, the way I looked at it was that, you know, if we had the right location, we could have shot it on a phone if it came down to it, you know, if things got that bad. But without the right location, you don't have a film. It's so important. It's so important to immersing the audience in the look and the feel, because people would be familiar with the kind of film that we were making, because they would have seen so many TV shows like that. And if we could get that right, then we could just sort of get that little bit of suspension of disbelief to really bring them on board with what we were doing with the film, you know. An exciting memory of shooting the movie was something that I was kind of dreading. The film takes place mostly inside the haunted house, but we do have quite a lot of exteriors, because during the night, one of the presenters comes outside and talks to the crowd who are gathered outside. So we were shooting in November, because we wanted to get it released for Halloween the following year. And we wanted to maximize night shoot hours. So we had to shoot all of our exteriors in one night. And I think it was about 14 pages, which sounds nuts. Now, I suppose it's a little bit different because we were shooting TV documentary style, single camera running around, which obviously means that you've got one setup really for every scene. But if it rained, we didn't really have a backup because there were so many different elements. Of course, there was the setup outside. There was extras. We had to put on more catering, obviously, for the extras, and all those other different bits and pieces. The way our schedule was generally, it was so tight because we were shooting the whole thing in about 7 days. So we just had to pray that it wouldn't rain, and it didn't. Miraculously, in the middle of November in Belfast, it didn't rain. It actually wasn't really that cold either. I mean, it was still cold, you know, but it wasn't like proper Baltic weather, which is what happens at home. So we were just so lucky, because if it had rained that night and we hadn't got that, we would have rescheduled and we would have reorganized and everything. But you're constantly thinking about so many different things. And if we'd had to put time into rescheduling all the exteriors for another night during the week, other stuff would have got pushed to the side, and knock-on effect, domino effect of what always typically happens in such a short, low-budget shoot. So we were so lucky, so lucky with that. Post-production was very, very interesting because what I thought would happen didn't happen, which probably, is predictable, because there's absolutely nothing predictable about the editing process. But I have a particularly fond memory of post-production because I thought that we were really going to piece together the film very close to the script, where we would have one scene and then all of the little inserts that we had. I was pretty sure that we were going to stick closely to the script. But during post-production, we came upon an idea of how we could move the camera around the house in a way that felt organic, it felt real, and it helped us use multiple takes of the same scene. We had a real worry because we were shooting scenes that were maybe 3 or 4 pages long, which is a tremendous pressure to put on the actors. We were all brilliant and we all rehearsed. We had 2 days of rehearsal and we had a lot of really fantastic actors, but it's so much pressure on them when you know you're only going to have 2 or 3 takes to be doing such long scenes. But we worked out how we could put takes together, which really, really saved us. We also realized that normally in the film, when we went to commercial break, we would stay in the house and see behind the scenes. And this is kind of a feature of Haunted Ulster Live, that you have the presenters, what's going on broadcast TV, and then you have the behind the scenes stuff. And there's obviously a little bit of behind the scenes drama. But we realized that what we would really like would be to shoot some commercials that we could cut to. So we had 2 half days of additional photography in January, where we went out.
It's time for another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we shot some ads, some local TV, 90s local TV ads. And that was a lot of fun because I'm not sure under what other circumstances you would get to do something like that. And we shot a whole, I won't spoil it for anybody, but we shot a whole like 45-second ad, which is pretty brutal, but it is actually representative of some of the advertising that you would get on a kind of anti-terrorism ad that you would get on TV in Northern Ireland in the 80s. And we shot one of those and it works with the film. But it was a lovely story thing that if I had come up with it at screenplay stage, somebody would have said, okay, throw that out. you can't do that. It's ridiculous, you know, because you would have, it would have been a whole other location. It would have been new actors. You would have been fitting it into the week-long schedule. It would have been a unit move. And it just, it would have been one of the first things that you would have thrown out. But to come up with it during post-production, we could shoot it with a skeleton crew. There were literally like three of us doing it. So it's a nice lesson there, you know. You can have the full crew working on the main stuff. And then if there's anything that you're running off to do in a couple of hours, you don't need to have 20 people there. If there was one person that I could have in the audience, and I don't know how high I'm aiming with this, but I actually think Mark Kermode would enjoy our film because I think he has a particular affinity with Belfast. He's over once a year with Cinemagic, and I know he likes Belfast. I think he would get the kind of local humour in it. I think he would get a kick out of the 90s setting and how we've kind of used like Northern Ireland TV with the horror stuff and with the obvious Ghostwatch influence, which is there. So Mark Kermode. Honestly, it's maybe not completely beyond the realms of possibility as well. You never know.
So my name is Onur Tükel, and I'm the writer and director of the movie Pound Cake. So Pound Cake is about a serial killer who's running around New York City, and he's only killing straight white men. And nobody cares because, you know, straight white men now are, they're finally getting, you know, they're being held to task for, you know, centuries of oppression, millennial epochs of oppression. And so no one's taking it very lightly. There's a lot of, there's kind of a Greek chorus in the movie of podcasters who are talking and debating about who the killer is and what's happening. And no one really, really gives a fuck that straight white men are being killed, you know? So there's all some other storylines too. There's a father and a mother who are coming to terms with their son who's just come out of the closet. There's I'm in the movie myself. Myself, I'm an actor in the movie, and I play a middle-aged man who is having problems with his own irrelevance. Being a middle-aged man, for one, if you're an old man, no one gives a fuck about you. But in this culture, if you're a straight man, you're even worse. You're just a boring straight man. So a cis man. So he's having problems with his own, you know, sexual identification and whatnot. So he's trying to experiment with his wife and do things that are a little bit more, you know, fluid, sexually fluid and not so rigid as he calls himself. He feels like a rock and he wants to be sexually fluid. So they're experimenting with things. And there's some other storylines and it's all kind of in service of this idea revolving, how can I say this? I guess I don't want to give it away. If I say what it is, it'll give it away. But everything's kind of cohesive and everything's kind of connected by the serial killer. You know, there's a serial killer killing everyone, all these straight white men. Basically, straight white men in the movie are props to be killed, you know? And for the first time in a long time in a movie, in a horror film, people of color are in no danger at all. Gay people are in no danger at all. It's only cis white men who are in danger of being killed in unspeakable and horrible ways. And I wanted to make a comedy about that. So it's a comedy, it's a satire. It's kind of satirizing a lot of things in the current culture and the zeitgeist. And it's satirizing, it's making fun of kind of everything. I think it's meant to poke fun at the idea of freedom of speech. Not poke fun at the idea of freedom of speech, but celebrate the idea of freedom of speech in art. Anything goes in art, but can you go too far? That's what the question, that's what the movie kind of, you know, it proposes that question basically. This movie was a very, very tricky movie because we're taking a big risk making this film because it's not just that the serial killer is killing straight white men. It's how he's doing it. It's going to be very controversial. And if you're squeamish or if you're ultra sensitive, you might have a problem with it. Right. So I knew before I wrote the script that, hey, this movie probably won't get made. So I went to investors first. Got them all properly drunk on whiskey, you know, gave them my pitch. And yeah, it's about a serial killer who kills straight white men. And I had five investors in the room all ready to write me a check. They said, this sounds amazing. This sounds great. We'll write the check. You'll get your money. And then they said, well, how does he kill the straight white men? Does he kill them with an axe? Does he stab them? Does he poison them? How does he do this? And then I reveal how the killer kills the straight white men, which is, again, very controversial. And like four out of the five investors all put their checks back in their pockets and said, no, we can't do this. We definitely don't want to be associated with this. But there was one brave investor who said, I'll invest in this. And I knew that I had the money, the bare minimum amount of money to make this movie. So then I wrote the script. I felt like I'm 51 now, and it's hard. Time is very valuable. It's valuable for everyone. But the idea of writing a script that wasn't going to be made it didn't sit well for me. I need to be inspired knowing that I can make the movie. I'm not in the Hollywood system because, in Hollywood, things move slowly. For every project that gets made, there's 1,000 projects that don't get made. Films get developed, TV shows get developed, and they rarely happen. Most of the times people don't even get paid to develop things, right? So I like to work on things that are a sure thing, which means the budgets have to be a little bit lower, but you have creative freedom. So I got the investors involved in the script writing process early on. And when the investors came on board, they also helped shape the script. They gave ideas and whatnot. And also I let all my actors, when I write a script, I want the dialogue to seem very, very natural. So I give my actors a lot of latitude to change the dialogue if they want, So I get a lot of feedback from everyone when I'm writing and rewriting and whatnot. So, yeah. Being on set, one of the most memorable moments of the film was actually the first day of shooting, because one of the first scenes we shot was me having a very, very funny sexual situation with my wife in the film, which required me to be completely nude, wearing a modesty sock, as they call it in America. And I was very terrified. I haven't been, nude like that, so exposed on camera, really ever. Oh, maybe one time before in a project. But it was nervous because it was the first day of shooting. Most of the crew I've never worked with, but it actually broke the ice, to be nude on set. And I was the only nude person on set, and I'm the director of the piece. And so it was great because it put me in a light where I was very exposed, and it brought us all together because we're all having a good laugh at my expense. I wouldn't say I have the most sexy body with all my clothes off. So you tend, if I ever want to make anyone laugh, I just take my shirt off. And in this case, I had everything to, I was completely nude. So it was double the laughter. So it brought I think it was a great icebreaker to shoot the movie the first day, and for the director to be completely naked in front of everyone directing the scene, So that was fun. And it was, it helped me. I was kind of fearless throughout the rest of the movie because of that, because I'd gotten that out of the way first. The post-production process was pretty seamless on this, but there is a moment at the end of the film where a lot of people sing a song together. And when we recorded the chorus singing on the day, it just sounded like it didn't sound good. So I had to go back with a microphone and go visit the 30 or so actors that sang in this chorus, go to their individual homes and record them singing into a microphone. So that was kind of a pain in the ass, and it took a long time. But then I had my sound mixer mix all the music together, or the composer mix all the music together, and it sounded kind of beautiful. But it was a kind of a pain in the ass because on the day we shot the scene of everyone singing, it was miserably cold. We ran out of time. It wasn't enough time to get it right. So that, normally on a big budget film, you could bring all your actors into a studio, sing it properly. Everyone's getting paid to do that. But we didn't have the luxury on this to do that. We recorded every singer singing by themselves and then just mixed everything together, So yeah, it was time consuming, but gratifying, I think. I'd never done anything like that before. I don't know if I ever want to do anything like that again, but it worked, I think. Well, if we're in London, right? So I got to name two of the British actors, contemporary, who I love now. If I saw Steve Coogan in the audience, I would love that. If I saw Richard Grant in the audience, I don't know if they live in London, but if those two were in the audience, or one of those guys were in the audience, I would just be, it would be the greatest night of my life. You know what I mean? Like, I love Steve Coogan. I love Richard Grant. So one of those assholes, if they were in the audience, I'd be so thrilled, you know? So, but I mean, that's boring. If it was someone who was dead, I'd love my mom for my mom to be in the audience. You know, if my mother was in the audience, I'd think, well, I must be dead too, because she's dead. And I would think, all right, something's really gone awry here if my mom's in the audience. But if there was a way to like go back in time and say, who could I have in the audience? Anybody, it would be my mom, obviously, because I miss her terribly, you know, although she'd be embarrassed as hell watching this. But at the same time, she'd think, you know what? I'm in the audience watching a movie. This is better than being dead, I suppose, even if my son is doing horrible things on screen, or at least embarrassing things on screen, you know.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with at least one friend. Put a link out on social media. Rate and review it for your preferred podcast platform. Put an ad in loop. Nobble the town crier. Whisper in the ear of the town gossip. You get the picture. It all helps bring new people into the Britflix podcast fold. Thank you.
Another season of The Palmetto Porch, an original podcast from Discover South Carolina. I'm Devin Whitmire. Join me as I get to the heart of what makes South Carolina such a great place to visit by speaking to the locals who make it so special. Premiering December 5th, find The Palmetto Porch wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about our show, visit scpalmettoporch.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.